Hey everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode 38 of Cloud Control. And here we are. Kate, you know what? I haven't brought up my favorite hockey team, the Dallas Stars, in quite a little while in this podcast, but you know what? We're getting down to it. 10 games to go, regular season, Stanley Cup on the way, I hope. Oh my God, I can feel it in my bones. I'm so excited.
Well, fingers are crossed. We did just finish watching them have a beautiful victory before recording. So you know what? Maybe this is a little time capsule to look back on their glorious victory at the end of the year.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Okay. Well, you know what? This isn't a hockey podcast. This is a video game podcast. I just had to get that out there in the world. Maybe it's a good prediction. You know what? Good omen. Let's figure it out. Okay. Let's get a Stanley Cup. Okay, so speaking of predictions and time capsules, if you'll remember, if you listened to last episode, we have some fun things to take care of on the show today. So just to give you a little outline of what we're going to be talking about, we both played the Princess Peach Showtime demo. We don't play a lot of demos often, but we did both play this one, so we're going to talk about that just to open up the show. And then we've got a couple really cool games to talk about after that, including Lies of P and Balatro. I don't know. I think it's Balatro. We'll talk about that Balatro? As well. Yeah. So, you know, one of the above. But first, like we said, I won our predictions competition from last year. So that means
just barely.
Just barely. It was a pathetic competition. But that means I get to pick a game that at some time this year Kate has to play. Mm-hmm. And the caveat there is that this has to be a game that is available as of today, March 28th, that is available on Steam for $3 or less. So it was a tough choice, Kate. I'm going to tell you what. There's a lot of games on there I would never want to make you, spend anything on.
Well, I know there's also a lot of games on there that are definitely worth more than $3. Like, I know for a fact I bought Florence for less than $3. So that is the standard of quality I'm hoping that you stuck to. But I have a slight fear by the grin on your face that that is not what I'm going to be receiving.
Okay, I was like, they don't look terrible, but I obviously didn't, I didn't go for the cream of the crop either, because there are some pretty good, good games you can get on there. But anyway, let's not draw it out. I got two choices for you. I'm going to let you choose based on name alone, and you can look it up if you'd like. The first game is called Up, Left, Out. Three words separate.
Okay. I really like the name so far.
Okay.
Okay.
But you can't look it up until you pick.
Okay. Okay.
You can't look it up now. And then the other game is called Sanctum.
Oh, that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. So I feel like Up, Left, Out is going to be like a cute puzzle game.
Okay.
Based on the name. It's kind of puzzly, kind of like almost reminds me of one of those like unlocking games where you've got to kind of like slide the blocks and then you eventually get like the main block out. But Sanctum could be anything. That is so nondescript. I'm going to go for Up, Left, Out. I think that sounded exciting, but I'm curious to look up Sanctum.
Sounds good. So I'll just give you the rundown of what they both are for the listeners out there. Kate, you can Google if you want in the meantime. Sanctum is from Coffee Stain Studios. They did a few other games we've talked about on the show, but I can't remember what they were. Some indies we've seen in showcases, but that game is basically a tower defense game, but is a first person shooter. So it looked kind of cool. And you were exactly bang on about Up, Left, Out. It is a very aesthetically pleasing sort of block sliding, puzzle unlocking type of game. And I just was really drawn in by the color scheme and I thought it looked cool. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's very minimalistic. I don't know why I had thought it reminded me of Free Cell. I think maybe because there's one picture where it's green and then white with red on it. So it kind of looks like cards on a green background, like Free Cell.
Oh, cards on the green background. We might talk about some of those later on in the show. So there you go.
Okay, Kate, awesome.
You must play this, Up, Left, Out.
This, it's tagged as puzzle, minimalist, and relaxing. So honestly, that sounds like I'm in for a good time. So, I appreciate that you didn't make me play so many things that you could have made me play.
There could have been Zoob 1, Zoob 2, Zoob 3. I don't know what Zoob is, but there was a heck of a lot of Zoob games on there for like 68 cents.
What is that? Wannabe Zoom beanies?
I don't ever want to know. Kate, let's talk about something that's way more of a real video game than probably most of these we've talked about so far. And that's the demo for Princess Peach Showtime. We both took the time to play this. What was it? About an hour long or so?
Just
something
under,
like that. Yeah. Yeah. What did you think? Let's talk about the demo.
I mean, it's really cute. That's the first thing. I love the idea of it. Like, I love the presentation. I like that Peach has this thing where she sort of just like does everything. Like, her new thing is like, especially like in Mario Odyssey, like every place she was in, she had some like outfit and she was like exploring and like, I'm an astronaut now and now I'm, you know, whatever. And I kind of like that that's sort of the Peach thing. Maybe it's kind of Barbie-esque in a way where she just like has a million professions.
Interesting. I took it as more of like, she's kind of like Kirby now where she just has different like powers. I don't know. But you're right. It is kind of like Barbie-ish too. But I guess she's very Barbie-esque as a character.
Yeah. So it kind of works. My main takeaway for this, I think it's cute. Like, I don't think I'm going to be like rushing out to buy it in the same level of interest that I have in a like a mainline Mario game. But I was pretty happy with what I played. And I really think it seems like it's maybe targeting a slightly younger audience than your traditional Mario game would, which on one hand is kind of cool because maybe you get some younger female gamers into, you know, like playing Peach. And on the other hand, it's kind of like, why does Peach have to be simple but Mario is like complex? That's kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, Nintendo always has a spectrum, I guess, but yeah, it would have been nicer. Yeah. I feel like it is very simple. That's what I was going to say as well. Like, I guess the caveat would be like, it seems like there's multiple levels that you go through as you play the game. So we got to play in the demo like sword fighting Peach and then Patissier Peach, I guess, like she was a baker. And I'm guessing that those activities would get harder as you go through the levels of them.
Yeah, I think each one you played was like to be continued, and that kind of implied to me that there would be like that sword fighting Peach 1-1-1, and then you had sword fighting Peach 1-2, and like there would be some complexity, but just the way that it controlled felt very simple. Like, even if you make the levels more complex, maybe a little bit more like puzzle solving could be somewhere where the challenge could increase, but the way it controlled didn't really feel to me like there would be like tons to do with that. You know, not in the same way that Mario is like, you know, like kids can play Odyssey, but there's like so much like complexity in how like high the ceiling is to like control the like jumping mechanics that Mario has, right?
Yeah, this game's not trying to be anything close to that. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. You know what game I heard this compared to on a separate podcast, and I think was a really apt comparison, was Mario
Party.
Can I take
a guess? Oh, Mario Party.
And if you think about it, I was
going to say Paper Mario.
You know, the cooking game especially was the one that I felt was quite weak. Like, there wasn't really a lot going on, and you know, after thinking about it, they are kind of like Mario Party games. Like, you're just kind of pushing the button and waiting till the cake rises, letting go, stacking them on trays. There's even a stage behind you at the end where there's like a drum roll and it's like, who's going to win? How many did you get? Mm-hmm. Like, it's very Mario Party. And I couldn't get that out of my mind once I heard it.
I mean, that one did. I think say the Sword Fighter one didn't, because that had like a proper level that you went through. And like, it was kind of cool that it had sort of like the 2D section where you went like from left to right, and then you also went like from like front to back as well, so it changed the perspective. And I think maybe you could do some cool things with that. Maybe if there's like a more of a moveset you could get, I could see it being kind of cool. I think I secretly like that part for being a parry section, because right. All the bosses you had to fight, like how you fought them was basically like wait to dodge, and it's very, very generous. But you do the dodge, and then Peach just goes ballistic on them, and that was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of fun. It was.
You know, maybe a little more like action commandy, like timing stuff, but
I don't see it getting too complicated. Right. You're right, though.
Yeah, I don't either. And you're right that the baking felt very mini game. What's funny about that though is I was so bad at it. I'm curious how you did, but
I maxed out those cakes. I was cooking them nice.
Oh my god. I stormed through.
Peach over here.
the sword fighting section, like, no problem. Like, Peach can handle herself with a blade, no biggie. But the Whisk is a much more difficult tool to manage.
You know what's funny is I actually got stuck just a little bit on the sword fighting one because I didn't realize at first that when they do the ground slam, you have to dodge it with A instead of the B. Mm-hmm. So I got hit a couple times and I was like, what's going on? Like, my timing is not this bad. And then I realized, like, oh, it's the other button.
That's funny. Anyway. Yeah, no, my cakes were bad. I didn't even do the last cake. Oh, like, God. I couldn't finish them all.
Oh, no.
Like, it was too arts and crafts for me. I got through the first couple cakes. I'm like, all right, no problem. This is fine. But, like, the last cake, the last two were, like, kind of complicated. These, like, sort of, like, intricate patterns, yeah, right? It starts out with just, like, do the outside.
And the cake is spinning, too. Like, it's rotating, so you can't really take your time and be patient. You kind of have to time it out, you know, take a chance.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, my second last cake, like, the process I found out is that if you just cover the entire cake, the game registers that you've done the pattern eventually.
Yes.
True. And that's how I completed the second last cake, and I did not finish the last one.
Kind of weak, but I mean, nice work, man.
It was weak. Yeah. I did not get very many stars that level, and I felt kind of bad that it was the demo cake level.
Yeah. Do you know one thing I found really weird about this game too was the way that they use like text to command you and give you instructions of what you're doing. I don't know about you, but I found that there was a couple times in the cake baking section where, you know, there's a character, it's a Toad or a Koopa or something. I think it's Toad talking to you from the side, and he's giving you instructions of how to make the cake, but the game doesn't really give him a text box or like prompt you to click through his dialogue in any way, and I actually missed the first couple of instructions that he had said. And so I found that really strange because there's lots of little dialogue pieces that pop up from characters as you're walking through the Princess Peach's castle, and it doesn't look any different than that. I found it very strange.
Yeah, you're right, they're not differentiated. And I thought the other thing that I thought was kind of confusing, especially for a demo, because you think the demo is like it's supposed to be a little bit more like forthcoming with those kind of things, right? And I found, like, there's an attack in the Peach one that's, like, an up attack. Mm. They call it an up air, which I thought was funny, because I was like, ah, Smash Bros., I got it. But I didn't know you could do that, and there were some enemies on the ledge above me, and I was thinking about how to get them. And then there's, like, a little button you can press and that brings up the controls, but they don't come up otherwise. And so it took me a second to know I even had a couple moves, because I didn't pull the controls up. I did that move by accident. Up.
Yeah. So I figured it out, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, it was a weird blend of like easy but also like a little bit like obtuse a couple times, which I don't know, seems kind of like a weird juxtaposition of like trying to be very very accessible but kind of like being
I mean, that's Nintendo in a nutshell. You can't change your controls. Yeah. We're not gonna do this tutorial is in depth, this other one which is way too in depth. I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah. I don't think it's something either of us will play. But I would be interested to, like, if the demo was double as long and you got to sit down for 10 minutes with each of the different Peaches, I would definitely be interested to, like, try out a level for each of them just to see what that feels like.
I agree. Some of the designs are really cool. Like, that Ninja Peach looks awesome. And, like, I'm curious what, like, Mermaid Peach is. It looks like it might be, like, a rhythm game because she was singing. Like, I think it's definitely intriguing. Like, I kind of wish it was sort of a Mario-style thing where it was, like, all ages. Whereas this feels a bit more like targeted towards a young audience exclusively. And so,
yeah. And like my biggest worry would just be that because they're developing so many different gameplay styles, like are some of them underbaked compared to other ones, you know, is the sword fighting one way worse than the cowboy one for whatever reason?
Let me tell you, my cakes were definitely underbaked.
All right.
did you not get Paper Mario flashbacks, by the way?
I did. Gourmet guy wanted those cakes. That's why my Peach made, in my head, the canon was Peach was a good baker because she had to practice feeding Gourmet guy back in Paper Mario.
Yeah, it made so much sense. I felt like I let her down. I was like, Peach, girl, you've been doing this for like 25 years. I'm sorry I can't decorate this cake for you.
Oh my God. Well, speaking of Princess Peach, which starts with a P, why don't we talk about Lies of P, which is very different, but a very cool video game. And I'm honestly very excited to hear more of what you have to say, because this is something I definitely want to check out sometime soon. But yeah,
so
Lies of P, come on.
Long story short, I adore Lies of P.
Early frontrunner for Game of the Year for you, I'm guessing, right?
Honestly, like...
What about Ragnarok, though, you know?
Well, Ragnarok already won
Oh,
by
sorry.
last year, so
Wasn't
it's
didn't you have
okay.
another game that's like a hangover from the previous year?
Oh, I think Ragnarok was hungover for me. I mean, the Elden Ring DLC comes out in June, so
true, true.
That's kind of a bummer for Lies of P. But maybe if we make a rule that DLCs can't win.
Wow. Way to show your bias. Then... Wait till you play something before you... Anyway, let's talk about Lies of P.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not saying for sure, but honestly, the Lies of P was amazing. Like, this is a game that has no business existing. Like, nobody ever had on their bingo card that, like, Pinocchio Souls-like was going to A, come out, and B, be amazing. And somehow it did. So, Lies of P is really cool. I mean, I obviously love the From Software games. I've played a decent amount of, like, FromSoft-inspired games. And those are varying degrees of quality. But Lies of P is in this, like, really beautiful, amazing sweet spot where, like, it is the only game I've ever played that feels like From Software, but is not made by From Software. And that is, like, that is impressive.
Can you, can you quantify, like, what that, how that is differentiated?
You know, I think it's partially, so I kind of got a few sections to go through, but okay. I think overall it comes a lot down to the combat. Like, it is so incredibly polished. The feel of it is just perfect. Like, it's got the perfect weight. The animations look great. The timing on everything is, like, picture perfect. I think a lot of it comes down to they took a lot of inspiration from different From Software games, and they were not subtle about it. But they also distinctly did their own thing at the same time. And I think the problem is that a lot of games, like, maybe they try to steal too much and don't have their own identity, or they don't really get what makes the games good in the first place. And then they're in this weird, like, in-between where it doesn't really feel like a Souls game, but it's set up like it's supposed to play like one. And Lies of P just, like, they nailed it. Like, this, they're having a DLC coming out, I think, sometime soon.
Yeah,
and,
I
like,
think
that's
so.
A day one for sure. So I guess kind of the combat is obviously the first thing to talk about with a game like this. So... it has a really fantastic style. They have what I love, and I honestly want From Software to do this themselves because they've never quite done it this way, but it has, like, a really good parry and a really good dodge. And you don't always get those, like, I think we never had those things together. So, like, in Sekiro, for example, parrying is your moveset. Essentially, like, you have a dodge, you have a jump, but 99% of the time, the best thing to do is to parry because it's so fast and you hit it on attacks and you get these long strings of, like, you know, 10, 12, 15 in a row and ding, 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 done. And then whereas in other games, parries are usually quite slow. They're usually for things like you need to almost predict and do it a little bit earlier because, like, you need to, it takes time for, you know, your sword to make that parry motion or your gun to go off in Bloodborne. But in Sekiro and Lies of P, it's almost basically instant. So you just, the second it hits you, you press it and it's, like, frame perfect. But in Lies of P, they also give you a good dodge. And so you can kind of do the more traditional, like, roll away or, like, roll through attack. And so it makes this really cool system where, like, sometimes you use one and sometimes you use the other, but it isn't like it isn't always a time where one's inherently, like, the right thing to do. So you're not, it's less like feeling like you're learning, okay, that move I have to dodge this way. That's how you deal with it. And it's more just intuitively feeling like, okay, parry, parry, then I dodge that one, then parry this one. And it's like this really kind of open system where those things kind of work really well in tandem.
That sounds really appealing to me, I would say.
Yeah. Like, it's really cool. Like, I played it, and I love Sekiro, so I found that, like, I was parrying most things and then doing some dodging. But a friend of mine who was playing at the same time, he was doing the exact opposite, where he was dodging most attacks and then parrying sometimes. And we felt like we both kind of had, like, similar degrees of success, but we were approaching it, like, completely differently, which is cool because oftentimes there's, like, one thing that's kind of, like, the best option.
Well, that's something that made me bounce off of Sekiro because I didn't really particularly love learning the parry timings. But if I could dodge, like, one of the reasons I love Bloodborne was because dodging was such a great option for me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's really cool. Like, you can kind of play it both ways, and it's really fun once you kind of feel comfortable with both to do a little bit of each. And like, sometimes, like, you know, if it's maybe like three really quick attacks in a row, the parry is going to be better than a dodge because you can't dodge three times as quickly. But for the vast majority of times, like, it just kind of feels like you just sort of go with it and make it up as you go along. And like, it's a very like intuitive feeling system. So I really, really appreciate that. There's also a couple other cool things. Like, they have like the Legion arm is kind of like the Sekiro arm where you put different things on it. So like, you start out with a basically like a scorpion hook that just pulls enemies to you, which is really cool. And then you can buy and upgrade different ones. There's two kind of things that they do that's new, which I really liked. And one is there's a lot of like weapon customization. So every weapon comes with a in it as a handle and a blade, and those things are separable. So you can put whatever blade you want on whatever handle you want. So you could have like a massive glaive handle with a tiny dagger tip on the end you
I
want,
love it.
or the opposite, where you have the tiny dagger handle and like a big hammer. Like, why not? And each of those things has like its own different kind of stats. So it's very like augmentable to your weapon and to kind of like build something that fits for you, which is kind of cool. And I found I used maybe more weapons throughout my playthrough than I would otherwise of just usually sticking with one simple thing. And then finally, the other thing I thought that was really, really cool about the combat is the way that stagger works. So typically in this game, stagger is something that just kind of happens. It's usually some like Sekiro, I guess you do get to see it, but the other games, you usually don't get to see it. Like, once the boss takes enough hits, they'll just kind of like fall over for a second, and then you get to beat them up. And it's sort of this like hidden stat. It just kind of happens. You know, if you have a big hammer, it happens immediately. And if you have a dagger, you don't see that throughout the entire playthrough of the game. But and Lies of P, it's kind of cool. They have this stagger, and it happens, I say, with somewhat frequency. Like, you might do it once or twice to a boss as you're fighting a boss. But they have this really, really neat mechanic, and I think it's as fun as it is, like, you want to rip your hair out sometimes, is that the enemies will show that they're staggerable, but they won't just fall over. You have to then go up and hit them with a fully charged heavy attack, and that will knock them down. And then you get a lot of damage out of it, which sounds great, and it's really easy to do on enemies. But sometimes when a boss is like flipping around and like smacking you in the face, you don't have time to stand there and like hold your sword up and give him a big swing. But you know it's going to be tons of damage. So it adds this like really interesting like risk reward to the combat. And like, I have died so many times being like, oh, I'll just get the stagger and then I'll win. And then I get hit. I'm like, okay, well, I'll get it this time for sure. And then
Do
you
you feel
just
like it's
like
kind of
eat
like a
it.
random chance, or like, are you,
No, it's definitely not
it's just
random chance,
tough?
because like you have a window of time once you've built up enough stagger that you have to land the attack to trigger it. But it's very cool because I find sometimes in these games the stagger just sort of feels like it comes out of nowhere. And you're like, oh, I guess they're just dead. Okay, fine. And it's like this weird momentum.
Right, or the
But
kind
in
of
this
thing where
having
like
like
what fills their stagger bar is actually like a tiny little hit, which wouldn't actually knock them out.
Yeah, whereas like here it feels like you have the agency of like, okay, I know I can do it, but now can I land the hit? And so there's this like extra level or this extra element of decision making to be like, well, I don't think I can be fast enough. I'm just gonna keep fighting them. Or, okay, I'm gonna try like intentionally to like put myself in a position where I can land this unique type of hit. And like, I just thought it was such a cool way of making that system feel like it's under your control. Whereas I find that in some of the other games, aside from Sekiro, which is a like kind of a different system, but the other games sort of feel sometimes like it just happens randomly and kind of out, you can't like plan for it or like, you know, and
Interesting. It
so
sounds cool.
I think that's.
I think that was in the demo, right? I vaguely remember having to like charge up and smash some
Yeah.
guy in the head or something like that.
Yes, so that wasn't the demo. I would be remiss to not mention the demo. I think the game feels a million times better than the demo did. I played the demo and I was definitely interested, but having played the full release now, they've definitely just made the game feel a lot better. Like, I think I found that it didn't always feel like I was, my character was doing perfectly what I thought I was inputting into the game. Whereas now, like, I haven't had a single problem. I will say too, like, not a single performance issue. Like, the game is just like polished perfection. Yeah, it's so good. The boss design is fantastic. There's some really neat kind of like puppet stuff that they play on. So they, one of the bosses in particular kind of almost like moves like marionette like.
Oh, I was going to say, there's got to be a creepy really marionette cool. in there somewhere. At least one.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think it's great. The world is really cool. I think there's a lot of diversity in terms of the levels. My personal favorite was this like really grand, magnificent opera house, which was really cool. And it had these like cool, like opera spider puppets. Like, it was just really, really incredibly cool.
I was going to ask you if there's any kind of variety to the levels, or is this kind of like a very dark game? Because I know like the demo was quite dark and dreary. Mm-hmm. And I know Bloodborne, like for the vast, vast majority, is very much like that. And I know this game is so heavily compared to Bloodborne. I'm like, I wonder if there are going to be any sort of brighter moments in this game at all or not.
So this is the next part of my critique is this game just Bloodborne? And the answer is kind of yes. The majority of the game is sort of like, kind of like dingy, dark, destructed kind of like cityscapes, very Bloodborne-esque. But they do have some sort of unique areas as well. Like I said, the Opera House, I think, is a really standout place because it was just, it was so different. So I think they do a pretty good job in terms of variety. There's a lot of city area, but there's also just a lot of areas in general. And so it doesn't feel too overwhelmed by city. I think the one place I would say that... I think they like match up to From in a lot of the combat. I think the level design is definitely something a bit more simplistic. It has the really cool like looping where like you get an elevator and then later you can use the elevator. Or there's a gate that only is open from one side and that takes you back to the start of the area. But overall, like there's a lot of like random luggage and barrels and boxes that are knee high that you can't step over. And I think that's fine. Like I don't have a problem with linear worlds at all. In fact, often I would pick them over an open world. But this game just has a lot of like, it seems like the area is going to be a lot bigger than it is. And then it's quite restrictive in how far you can actually explore it. So gotcha. I think that's one of those things where,
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, like I don't think it's a bad thing. Yeah. I think, you know, I don't think it necessarily hurts the game that much, but the way that it's presented is not that like the area doesn't go in 20 directions. It's just that it goes in 20 directions, but only one of them doesn't have boxes blocking
it's
the
not
way.
It's not as well considered as the way they hide which ways you can go or like restrict you from moving.
Yeah.
Around. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, some of them just kind of felt like, you know,
it's like the invisible wall problem back on the PS2 where like, oh, why can't I go in the forest? Like, oh, I guess I just can't.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think I would have necessarily even thought about it if it wasn't like, if it was presented in a different way, but you know, and they reuse a lot of assets. So sometimes you're like in the forest and you're like, oh, there's some luggage blocking that way. Or like it's not quite that bad, but it feels a little restrictive at times. But moving on, obviously, the NPCs in the story is a big part of these games, and I really liked a lot of the characters in this. Sophia, in particular, the girl that you level up at, who's often personified by the blue butterfly, is fantastic. She is such an amazing character. I really was moved by her story. I think one of my friends that I played the game with, because obviously the level up lady is such a trope in these games, and he was like, oh, where does she rank in the level up ladies? And she beat some From Software level up ladies. Like, she's awesome. And the story is cool. There's...
Hard to talk about when you don't want to spoil it for me,
I guess. It's hard to talk about. I would say it is very... I would say I kind of wish the story didn't want to be Bloodborne.
I have a question. Is it more explicit in any ways than the From games as well?
Okay, so
like how much maybe do I'll... do I have to watch a 4-hour lore video about every item on the ground?
You do not. It is definitely simplified, and there are some quality of life elements to the story as well that I think most people really are going to love. And so that is when you are teleporting to your, they're called stargazers, but it'd be like your lamps from Bloodborne. Whenever you are teleporting them, including Hotel Krot, which is like your hub area, if a character's storyline can be progressed, it puts a picture of their face beside the place they're at.
Oh my God.
So you always know when you need to go talk to someone and where they are. And that makes it like so easy to not miss anything. And it's actually like a really nice feature. There's times where like they might, you know, have more dialogue, and so it won't be shown there if they've just got like a new thing to say or like a new item in their shop to sell or something. But for like their main actual like quest things, like storyline stuff, like it'll always show you, like you'll check your stargazer and be like, oh, this person wants to talk to me. And maybe they're like sometimes at their hub area, sometimes they're at like some area in the game that you were playing 3 hours ago, but some characters just move there, right? And mm-hmm. in From Software, they just go there, and you better hope that you were like, you know, for playing 4D chess enough to know that they've gone. Whereas in this game, you're like, sometimes I'd be like, oh, why is this one lit up? And I go and be like, oh, that guy, okay, he's there. That's weird. I'll go check that out.
Yeah. It does sound like a really nice quality of life thing for sure.
Yeah. So it's definitely easier to kind of follow. It's got a main story that I think is pretty well done. I really like all the puppet stuff. Like, it's so bizarre that it's based off of Pinocchio because they play it so seriously. Like, it is a serious, gritty, dark story. It is not like, doesn't feel like a fairy tale or a fantasy at all. Although they do kind of make some references to other fairy tales, like, and different things like Beauty and the Beast comes up at one point.
Would be cool if they did sequels about all the different fairy tales as they come like for use.
Wouldn't that be cool? You should play the game.
I'm going to play it.
Wouldn't that be an interesting thing indeed? let me tell you, there's a post-credit scene and it will blow your mind.
Okay.
As like being the least expected thing ever.
I promise you, I probably won't beat this game. I'll get stuck at some point, at which point I will look up the ending. Because I'm invested.
Well, you can always summon. They make summoning a really easy thing to do in this game if you get stuck. But yeah, so I think it's good. I will say, and I'm going to be really weirdly vague about this because this is for if anyone has beaten the game. All the puppet stuff I love, and I love the story of the puppets and Geppetto and Romeo, and all the puppet characters are really, really neat. They do a Bloodborne, and secretly the second half of the game is also about something else. And I don't think that second half is super cohesive to the first half. I think it doesn't work poorly, but I wish they had kind of stuck exclusively to the puppet stuff, because I think there was a lot more potential in how they could have explored it. And a lot of the themes that they kind of introduce and keep in the second half going in a separate direction, I actually think work better if they had stuck to puppets. So I don't know if that was kind of a, like, we want to do a Bloodborne and have a big, you know, like sudden shift, or if, you know, they just had that story they wanted to explore. Either's fine. But I kind of wish, like, I was really into the puppet stuff, and then the game is not necessarily all about puppets.
Interesting. Wow, this is making me tempted to start it up, you know?
You know what? It's really good. It's a fantastic game. I absolutely adore it. I'm so incredibly impressed. Like, I beat Lies of P, and then I kind of wandered around for 2 days, like that guy in the meme, like, waiting for stuff. Like,
he's like, just got his hands crossed behind his back, like, yeah, standing by the swing set.
Kind of stacked. Yeah. I just like walked around like that guy's like, I don't know what to do now. Like, that was so fun. I got two other things to shout out really quickly, and then I'll shut up. One, the best quality of life feature in any video game ever has been introduced to Lies of P.
Really?
Which is in your menu when, you know, like you pull up, you see your health bar, your stamina bar, whatever. It shows you how much ergo you have, which is souls or blood echoes or whatever that currency is, and it's normally white, and when you have enough to level up, it turns blue. So you don't have to do that thing where you're like, I think I've got a lot of currency. Let me check if I can level up. You just know that you can. And then you don't waste your time going and checking because it's just, oh, it's blue now. Thank you. I can go level up. Amazing. Absolutely wonderful. The other thing is there's a cat that you get to make friends with. Super fun. Don't get that mixed up with the animals that are characters. This is a real, just legit cat. And finally, the main collectible you get in the game are records. And you play records at your hotel on this like big gramophone. And it is like one of the best video game soundtracks I have ever heard in my entire life.
Really?
It is so incredibly good. It's like sultry, like French singers. And then it's like a kind of like Spanish upbeat song is the next one. And then like, oh man, they're so good. Like I would just leave it open while I like did something else. Like go make some tea. Like I put a record on and go make some tea.
That is so cool. I was not expecting this game to get any kind of soundtrack.
Like it has like the regular like intense boss music, right? When you're like fighting stuff. But you just get these records and they're like genuine, just like normal songs. But like every single one of them was so good. And I've never cared about collecting the collectible in a game more than getting these records. Like I found the soundtrack on Spotify and I listen to it genuinely just all the time as music. Yeah. Oh, I guess one other thing, there's this whole like cool mechanic of when you lie or when you do certain things, the game's really cryptic about like, oh, the strings tighten. And you're like, what does that mean? And that's kind of cool. It's got this sort of like, kind of like Insight in Bloodborne. It's got this like hidden kind of stat that keeps tracking based on as you do things, which feels cool. Mm. There's also a guy that calls you and gives you riddles. I mean, that's so fun. He's like Quizlets or something, whatever his name
Quizmaster,
was.
Quizmaster.
Yeah, he just like calls you sometimes. Yeah, Chuck Quizmo just calls you sometimes and he's like, hey, what walks on four legs and then three legs and then two legs? And you're like, ah! You have to answer these riddles. So, I mean, it's great. It's just such a good game. Fucking love Lies.
Okay, I have two questions for you and then we can get on with the show. Question number one, is the cat also a puppet?
You know what? It's funny. I don't want to answer that question because the cat is kind of integral to the story in a weird way.
I asked that as a complete joke, but I guess I will forget about that.
The cat's important. The cat is low-key a little important.
Okay, and the second question is, I know you haven't seen it, but on the, you know, would you bet over under the chance that Lies of P is better or that you would enjoy it more than the Winnie the Pooh 100 Acre Wood horror movie? Which I would very much class, upon hearing about them, as a similar project?
Well, my answer to that is I really hope in one of the extended universe sequels of the children's copyright-free literature that we get Blood and Honey as a game in the same vein as Lies of P made by the same studio. So
would love it.
That's how I feel. I would like to be Piglet with a twin dagger build and just run around the 100 Acre Woods causing all sorts of havoc.
I'd be Owl. I'd just swoop on down with like bloody claws and take people out. It'd be what a crazy game.
I mean, Tigger Stomp build would probably be pretty strong too. That's got to do a lot of stagger damage.
Oh man. I agree. S-T-A-G-G-E-R, whatever he says. Stagger. I completely followed that, but you know what I mean.
He's like, that's how you spell stagger. That's right. Oh my god, that's the best joke you've ever made podcast.
Thank you very much. Wow, okay. Yeah, I'm moving that up my list. You know what? Once I beat Persona, I think it's time. I'll invest. Mm-hmm. Speaking of investing time, I've played a lot of Balatro over the past couple of weeks since I bought the game. This is something I think it's kind of become like a bit of a phenomenon, right? Like you've heard a bit about it too. People are playing.
You know what? You mentioned it to me and told me I should play it. And then within the same week, someone else I know recommended it directly. And then I must have heard like three or four other people just offhand talk about how great it is. So yeah, this is just kind of blown up.
Yeah, it's a really cool game. And I think, I don't know, I'm always looking, similar to like creature catching games, you know, I'm always interested in like, oh, what's the next really good deck builder that I want to try because those genres are just so addicting for some reason. And initially, I wasn't really interested in trying this because it, on the surface, looks a lot like poker. And I don't really care for casino games or like gambling games or poker and, you know. But, you know, I heard enough people talk about it just like you. And I was like, man, I have to try this. And I'm so glad that I did because it's a very cool game. And although it looks a lot like poker, it really is kind of, I don't know, it's not really anything like it aside from the aesthetic and the fact that you are trying to build like poker hands. So the way that it kind of works is there's eight, you start a run and there's eight rounds to your run. The rounds are called antes because it uses poker terminology. And it does take me a second to like wrap your head around what you're talking about. But each round is an ante. You got to beat all eight antes and you win your run. Within each of those antes, you're going to have three kind of, I guess, battles, we'll call them. They're going to have a small blind, a big blind, and then a boss blind. And you can take those on, or and as you do, you kind of gain currency. And you, the way you defeat them is you have to score a certain amount of points. So the small blind will be like 400 points, and you're going to get a hand of cards. And you've got to match, like, okay, I've got a pair of twos here, a pair of fives. And depending how complicated the hands you're pulling out of your things are, so a pair doesn't score as high as, say, four of a kind, which would give you a higher multiplier, be worth more points. And you just have to score enough points to pass the blind. I don't know if you're with me so far.
Okay. I'm following you so far.
Okay, so obviously, it starts off quite small, but you need to progress, and every time it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And the way you increase your score is that you begin to modify your deck. So you'll have just a regular deck of cards to start out with, but you can start to, after you fight each round, you go to the shop, and you can start to buy things like upgrades to your cards, where now your cards are going to be gold-plated, so you earn extra money while they're in your hand, or they're made of glass, so they multiply your score more, but they can break after you play them, so they're no longer in your deck. Things like that. There's also, I guess, the main mechanic of how you can customize is the jokers, which you can get from different booster packs, or in the store you can buy them a la carte, depending like if you have enough money and if you have space. But they do things like, they can do pretty much anything. There seems to be like over 100 in the game, I think. And they do things like whenever you play a hand that contains a spade, the spades are worth more. Whenever you play a hand that is four of a kind, they're worth more. If depending how much money you have in your inventory, you get more multiples. Depending how many blinds you've defeated, you get more. There's just endless different things. And so you begin to craft this deck, which is a combination of different kinds of hands you can put together based on what type of jokers you're finding to multiply the cards you're playing. And it's just really satisfying in a way to put these combinations together because it begins to be less about what's the best poker hand. And so if four of a kind's better in poker, but you've got tons of jokers and different level ups that have increased your just regular pair, all of a sudden you're going to try and be playing pairs the whole time because they're going to be worth more to you. So it's really cool the way you can have a completely different build as you go through.
That's really interesting because in deck builders, like, you never actually use a standard deck of cards. Because it's obviously just less exciting than, you know, the infinite potential of building any card that could possibly exist. But it's really cool that they've seemed to make a creative system while staying within that framework of like a standard deck.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so it's interesting because you can also choose not to face the blinds when you go through. You always have to face the boss. But you can skip the first two as you go through. And if you skip the battle, there's kind of pros and cons. If you skip the battle, you can't lose because if you go through any of these blinds and you don't make it, so you've got to hit 1,000 points, but you only score 900, you're out, like your run's just over. So if, you know, you might want to skip it if you think you might not be able to make the threshold. But if you skip it, you don't earn any money and you can't go to the store. So you do get a small reward if you skip it. It'll be like you can have one free booster pack or something, but the rewards are often not as much as the same amount of money you would earn and the flexibility you would earn by going to the shop.
like playing like something like Gungeon or like a roguelike where like you have like a floor map and then you find the way up to the next level and then you can just go, but then you've missed out on like however much XP or like items you could have picked up or something.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's just really complicated. Like there's even more nuance to it than I think I can explain without being able to see the game. Like you're leveling up kind of two separate stats, which are the amount of chips something is worth and also the amount of multiples it's worth. So for example, if you have a 5, it's worth 5 chips, and then that can be multiplied based on different various things. So if you were to play a pair of 5s, it would be like 10 chips for the 2 5s, and then because it's a pair, that's worth another 10 chips plus like a times 2. So do the math and it all adds up to whatever amount of points. But you can imagine as you begin to stack it up and you get more cards, more things multiplying, you can get certain jokers where, you know, depending on the amount of cards in your deck, if you've been adding a bunch of cards to your deck, it's like you can multiply by 15 times and all of a sudden you'll be scoring, you know, a whole boss in one hand because you've saved up and saved these awesome cards and put them all together. And it's just exactly what the game is looking for to like assemble that. It's kind of cool too. You can actually play with different decks themselves. Like it's one of those games where as you play runs, you unlock things as you go, and for doing everything, it'll be like, return to the main menu. Oh, you've unlocked a new card to use in your run. You know, save the game and then come back to it later. You've unlocked a new card for your run. So you're constantly like trying out.
Send the bar low. Things like yeah. That.
Yeah. But there's lots of different decks too. So there's, I guess you get, when you're in one of these rounds, you get either 4 or 5 hands you can play. And then you can also discard. So you're not really playing everything you can. You're really wanting to save up and be intentional about what you put down because you don't want to waste the plays that you have. And so certain decks, like the two you start off with are red and blue. The red deck has one extra hand you can play. The blue deck has one extra time you can discard. So you can sort of choose what you're putting in your hand. And as you go, you get different ones that augment sort of how much money you earn or what types of cards might be more powerful. So there's even playing different decks, you're kind of looking for different sort of bonuses off the start, which is kind of cool. Right?
Okay.
And so there just seems to be tons of customization. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I have a question. Sure. And maybe it's just like one of those things that's kind of hard to like picture without looking at it, but does it feel complicated to play? Because it sounds like there's so many things going on and like so many different ways to get multipliers. And like when I play a deck builder, and like maybe there's a little bit of bias just because I've played so much of it, but like Slay the Spire, for example, like I find that it's like relaxing and like easy to play, and it's like easy to build a deck because things just like are clear when they synergize. So is this like kind of a similar experience, or does this require a little bit more like focus and it's a little bit more like complicated to build an efficient system for your
deck?
The
answer, I think the answer is yes and no. Mm-hmm. I find this game to be very difficult. I've actually not beaten a run yet, even though I've played I think nearly like 20 hours. I definitely had beaten a run of Slay the Spire by that timeline. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of synergizing, it's pretty easy because if you think about it, there's only really 4 suits in a deck. And some of the bonuses are also for like face cards or different numbers. But oftentimes they'll give a bonus to multiple different things. It'll be like all face cards or 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10 or something. So it's not overly hard to find things that go together, which is really fun because you're always finding like, oh, this joker goes really well with this card that I have. And so like you're really excited to pick up what you can. But I think in terms of really, really having a great run where everything just lines up perfectly, I've had like 1 or 2 of those and I really feel like I should have been able to beat the kind of the boss. But the problem is just like you're drawing cards from a deck, like there's a certain random chance and you just don't get the cards you need, right? But I feel like it's really, there's a wide range of outcomes of how your run can go because of the just there's a such a vast amount of bonuses and multipliers. Like I think there must be more than Slay the Spire because I feel like you can reliably get enough things in Spire to where you can have a pretty good run a lot of the time. I don't feel like that in this for sure.
Okay, that's interesting.
Although another point I wanted to make of a reason I think this game is so great and one of the better roguelikes I've played, I don't know if it's one of my favorite, I still think there's probably ones I enjoy more, but this one's great because the runs end so quickly. And there's none of this drawn out like, oh, I hope I can hobble along and like get to a healing point and stuff
right,
like that.
Right, yeah, I've got 10 health and like I've got three more encounters till the, you know, yeah.
Exactly.
To the bonfire.
Yeah, so, you kind of know the writing's on the wall, right? But you also really like your deck and perhaps you want to try and tough it out because you might make it and then all of a sudden you're going to make it to the boss with the sick deck. In Balatro, like, you only get to play five hands or six hands or whatever in the round you're going. If you mess up the first couple and you're like thousands of points off, you just know it's over. Like you don't have to waste your time. It just ends and that's it. You go back to the start screen, you see if you unlock something, and you're just right back into another run really easily. And it's built like it feels like you're going in and out of runs very quickly because sometimes they end within like two or three hands. Like if you just get shitty cards, you know, and you need certain amount like early on, or you don't get, you know, very many cards that multiply your score very early on, you can die quick, but it's so easy to reload and you don't feel like you're guessing if you're going to make it or not, which is something that I really like.
So it sounds like really snappy, especially like depending on the format you're playing it on. Like yeah. I know you're playing on Switch and that's like a perfect kind of like handheld thing. Like, oh, I'll just play like a run or two and then, okay, great.
Oh my God. If you were to
accomplish something in the 20 minutes.
Yeah, you have to play it on Switch if you get it. I haven't played something on Switch for a while. So first of all, it's just nice to have something, you know, the reason to pull the Switch out.
And shout out to Princess Peach as well, because I couldn't remember the last time I played my Switch and I got that out for Peach. It was a good time.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's kind of why Peach was on my mind, because I pulled out the Switch to play this and then I saw the Peach demo and I was like, oh, we should talk about that. But yeah, it's been great on the handheld. You can even play with the touchscreen too. And the touchscreen is actually great. Like you're really just sliding cards. It's sort of a classic example of why you would want to play the Switch in a handheld mode is for something like this. Like I found it to be very good. Kind of put it on the table while I'm eating or something and I'm just swiping with my finger. It's perfect.
It's just like playing Snap on your phone.
Exactly. It really is. It's a really cool game. If you're not a poker fan, do not be put off by it unless you're like really detest playing cards and stuff. But you know, like we play Rummy Tiles and different like Crib and stuff like that. Like we know cards enough to where I don't think it's a detractor, and the game itself is just super addicting. I can't wait to beat a run. Because I know once I finally beat it, I'll unlock a new deck. And I want to see what it is. Like, what kind of deck? What kind of bonus will I get? You know, I need to see.
I think that's, like, Balatro's biggest enemy is that, like, people think it's poker and it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think I even heard, I was listening to, like, a news show the other day or, like, reading a news article. And apparently it has, I don't know if it's still banned, but apparently in some countries, Balatro got banned because they claimed that the rating wasn't correct for a game that has gambling.
Interesting.
Because it's rated lower because it's not a gambling game. But some people who obviously don't do enough work to investigate these things were like, oh, that's a gambling game, poker banned.
Right, so, yeah.
Where they went through some controversy. I don't know. I think they still might be in the middle of it, or hopefully it's been solved up, because I know the developers were fighting back on it, saying it's not actually a gambling game. It just looks like poker, but that's not good enough to...
Yeah, exactly. You know, the interesting experiment wouldn't necessarily be people buying, or it would be the other way around. I would be very interested to see what like a non-gamer who found Balatro thinking it was a poker game on like their PC or something like that, if they played this, what they would think of it, because I really think people would like it. It's not that complicated and it's friendly enough, like the cards are familiar.
Yeah, exactly, you know? It's something to work with. Like I could see someone being like looking at Slay the Spire and being intimidated because it's a lot of like, you know, unfamiliar like concept. Game
what's poisoning, what's these status effects, what's exactly armor?
Exactly, but you know what's in a standard deck of cards. You know what the suits are. You know what, like, you know what a pair is. You know what a run is potentially, right? Those are kind of ambiguous.
Yeah,
that's a good question. Yeah. It should see like that'd be a fun like cross section of data. Like, who likes it more? People who hate poker but like card games, versus people that like poker but don't think they like video games.
Oh my God. But could you imagine being someone that loves poker and video games? Like, this must be it. Like, hallelujah, man. Balatro. Here we go.
What is it? It's all those guys that, like, middle-aged guys who sit around playing darts. This is their dream video game.
Hey, you know what? Right now, it's... I would consider it as my game of the year pick. I mean, I know we're early, But I mean, not a ton of competition. I mean, Persona's probably gonna beat it. I probably like Midnight Suns more as well. But I mean, this is a great game. I could easily see it being like, you know, I wouldn't say game of the year. That's a bit of a high proclamation. But like indies sneak in sometimes. I wouldn't be like it's out of place.
You know, maybe it's the kind of game we create a category for to make sure it wins something.
No, it could win a few. It's cozy game for sure. Cozy game for sure.
Most creative game, you know? It sounds like it could be up there too.
Yeah, never know. Great game,
best
though.
Best character, that won you the game.
Oh, man. Yeah, none of them have won me the game yet. I'm pretty pissed off about that.
Well, that's okay, because best character we've already decided goes to that guy who sells URLs.
It's the URL.
You gotta play more Persona. James, you got to play more Persona. He got a new URL in stock.
Oh my God, last I got to get in there.
I went in there. I bought it. Let me tell you, it's a pretty saucy website.
I'm excited, you know.
Written
what?
URL for.
I'm getting up to the next, we were just talking offline before recording, and you're like one sort of boss fight ahead of me now. And I'm just waiting for the time when I have an hour or two to sit down.
I'm one full moon ahead of you. Yeah. I would say like you don't even maybe quite need an hour, but an hour would be good.
Ooh, maybe I'll do it now. We're done the show, right? Mm-hmm. This is over?
Yeah. Go play for some Persona.
Awesome. All right, everybody. It's time to play Persona. So let's end the show here. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time to talk about some more great video games. Probably Marvel's Midnight Suns, Kate. I think I'm going to talk about that on the next show. It's time. I gotta get that one off my chest. We've been saving it. So anyways, this has been Cloud Control, the gaming podcast. It's not just good, it's good enough. And we will see you on the next episode.